and you got this big old plate of food in front of you. You got some corn on there and some mashed taters and some turkey and the green bean casserole, and can't forget the cranberries, even though I don't like the cranberries. You got all that stuff sitting on your plate. You said your thanks. Grab your fork. What do you go for first? I know food, but what's the first thing? What's the first mouthful of what? What? Pie. Deb says, forget the good stuff. We're going for the pie right now. Stuffing. Oh, I forgot the stuffing. See, you take a big old bite of stuffing. I like stuffing, too. You take a big old bite of stuffing, and you put it in your mouth, and you're chewing it, and then you're like, something's missing. And what do you say? Exactly! Pass the salt. Pass the salt. And it's a very innocent little saying, pass the salt, right? Very innocent. But ultimately, when we say, pass the salt, what are we saying? Yeah. Did you hear that? Now, it's an innocent saying. It really is. But when we say, pass the salt, really, what we're saying is, I'm dissatisfied with the way this tastes. And I need to add something to it to make it better. Right? So, let's put this in contrast real quick. We have just sat down to a Thanksgiving meal, a Thanksgiving meal that more than likely I really didn't have a whole lot to do with. You know what I'm saying? I probably didn't spend hours that morning getting up, peeling the potatoes or breaking apart the bread the day before and doing all the different things. And one of the first things that comes out is, pass the salt. I start that way because I had a really interesting study this week. It was on salt. It literally was on salt. It all started with the wedding that I had, my last wedding of the year. Woohoo! I had the last wedding of the year, and we were meeting with the bride and groom. It was Adam Sabaka and Stacy Dykstra. They got married yesterday. It was a beautiful wedding. We had a great time. I tell you what, that was the toughest bride and bridesmaids I have ever seen in my life. They were so tough, they took all these pictures outside yesterday in the wind and the cold and the rain and stuff like that, and they had no sleeves on, these beautiful dresses, and the wind was blowing, and I showed up, and this whole entire wedding party is standing outside taking these pictures, smiling. It looked like they had the most wonderful tans in the world because they're all red from being so cold, but they're outside, and I'm thinking, you know what? There are deer hunters outside right now whining and complaining in their heavy coveralls that they're cold, and here are these women standing out there with nothing on but these slim little dresses, and I thought, wow, I don't know why I told you all that, but tough. Don't want to mess with those girls. Anyway, so we were getting ready for the wedding, and Stacy was saying, you know, I want to do something a little bit different. She goes, I like the idea of the unity candle. It's really cool. It's very pretty and very meaningful, but everyone seems to do that, and I don't want to do a unity candle. And I said, well, what about the unity stand? She goes, yeah, I've seen the unity stand. I like the unity stand. That's really cool. That's really nice. I said, what about the knot? She goes, yeah, I like the knot. And I'm out of suggestions at this point in time because those are the only three I really know. And I was like, well, what do you want to do? And she goes, well, what about pouring corn and beans into a thing? I was like, yeah, that's a cool idea because of the whole farmer thing and corn and beans. I said, but the whole idea is that the two are being mixed together and you can't separate them back out. And I can pretty well tell between corn and beans, and I can take those back apart. And she goes, well, there's got to be something else. I said, well, you look, research it, and I'll research it, and maybe we'll come up with something. We came up with this idea of the salt ceremony, a salt covenant. And I was like, I read it on the internet. I was like, what is this? It's something really interesting. It's biblical. And most people don't realize See, a salt covenant is mentioned two different places in the Bible, in Numbers 18, 19, and in 2 Chronicles 5, 13 is right. Is that right? 2 Chronicles 13, 5. I did the same thing Nathan did yesterday. 13, 5. And a salt covenant, the two times that a salt covenant is talked about in the Bible is between God and man in one way. In Numbers 18, 19, it's a covenant. Take a look with me. We'll look at it real quick. Numbers 18, 19 is a covenant between God and Aaron and the priests. And here's what it is. Verse 17, it starts like this. It says, "But you must not redeem the firstborn of an ox, a sheep, or a goat. They are holy. Sprinkle their blood on the altar and burn their fat as an offering made by fire, an aroma pleasing to God. Their meat is to be yours, just as the breast of the wave offering and the right thigh are yours. Whatever is set aside from the holy offerings the Israelites present to the Lord, and I give to you and your sons and daughters as your regular share. It is an everlasting covenant." Here it is. "An everlasting covenant of salt before the Lord for both you and your offspring." Do you hear that? An everlasting covenant of salt between you and your offspring. Then you take a look at 2 Chronicles. Woo! 2 Chronicles chapter, I just said it, didn't I? 2 Chronicles 13, verse 5. This is where Solomon's son and the other king who broke off, you have two different kingdoms now, Judah and Israel, okay? And they're warring because Solomon's son came in and says, "I'm going to be this really tough, rough ruler." And some people said, "Well, we don't want that type of ruler anymore." So Israel and Judah split off, and there's two different kingdoms. And these two different kingdoms are coming to war. They're about to fight against one another. And here Abijah stood on Mount Zerima, in the hill country of Ephraim, in verse 4, and in the hill country of Ephraim, and said, "Jeroboam and all Israel, listen to me. Don't you know that the Lord, the God of Israel, has given the kingship of Israel to David and his descendants forever?" Listen to what it says. "By a covenant of salt." Remember, David was made a promise by God that he says, "You will have a ruler on the throne forever. One of your descendants will be a ruler on the throne forever." And some people always interpreted that there's always going to be, you know, like one of David's, you know, sons or grandsons or something like that. And actually it is, because Christ is a descendant of David. And Christ is now sitting on the throne, and he will never be dethroned. So that covenant is a covenant of salt that will last for eternity. But this covenant of salt really got me wondering, so I started researching what it was really all about. And the covenant of salt is basically agreement between two parties. And the way they sealed this agreement was they would each have a pouch of salt. And salt was a valuable thing during these days. This is kind of like it is now. We don't pay a lot for it, but it's a valuable thing, because if you don't have salt, there's a lot of things that are missing in your life. Let's talk about that real quick. What does salt do? What's it good for besides adding flavor to the dressing? For what? It's a preservative, yes. We put salt on things to preserve it. I mean, all kinds of, even when you're canning, or if you're wanting to make sure it's some type of meat does not spoil, you can salt it in order to preserve it. That's why they do it with fish and meat and hams and bacon and all these different things. They put salt on it because salt is a preservative, and it preserves things, keeps it whole and good for us. What else does salt do? What? It absorbs water, yeah. It melts ice. That's a good thing. We kind of should have used that maybe in the marriage ceremony yesterday. You would melt some ice. But what else does salt do? It flavors. It brings zest to whatever it touches. What else? I learned something when I was in Haiti. Salt heals. Did you know that? Salt is a healing agent. I remember, this is very embarrassing. Do you remember this? This is a very embarrassing moment for me, but I'll explain it anyway a little bit. Not in great detail. But I got a rash, and it was a very uncomfortable rash in a very uncomfortable place, and it bothered me for a long time, and I was putting ointments on it and all the modern medicines and stuff like that, and of course, you don't want to talk about these rashes, you know what I'm saying? It was just very uncomfortable, and finally, I couldn't stand it any longer, and I asked Norma Alexander. I said, "Norma, I've got a rash. Do you have anything that I could put on it?" And she goes, "Oh, that's simple. Go swim in the ocean." And I was like, "What?" She goes, "Go swim in the ocean for a while." I was like, have you seen the ocean here in Haiti? I mean, if you know what you're talking about, because, I mean, you have to wade through the garbage and stuff like that to even get to the water. It's kind of nasty. And she goes, no, the salt water heals. And so I did. I went and swam in the ocean for about a half hour, and by the next day it was clearing up. So I went and swam in the ocean again, and in 2 or 3 days it was completely healed. All this ointment and all these different things I was trying to put on it, and really all I needed to do was go soak in what God had already provided. Salt. Salt is an amazing thing. So the salt agreement is where between two parties. When they have a bag of salt, they come to agreement on a terms of a sale or some type of agreement that they have to make, and they each take their salt, and they take a pinch of salt, and they throw it into the other person's bag. So they each have a bag of salt, and they take a pinch, and they throw, I can make this commitment to you, and throw that salt in the other person's bag. And then the other person takes a pinch of salt out of their bag, and they say, I make this commitment to you, and they throw the salt in the other person's bag. And what the meaning is this covenant, this agreement cannot be broken unless I'm able to go into my pouch and separate my pieces of salt from your pieces of salt. You know, how impossible would that be? Completely. Extremely difficult to separate the salt. So it's saying that this is an everlasting covenant that we're making. Now, I got to studying this whole salt thing, and I thought, wow, this is pretty amazing. I don't know why I haven't seen this. And I looked at all the different properties of salt, and then you start looking in the New Testament about what Christ says about salt. And what does Christ say about salt? He says what? You are what? The salt of the earth. You are the salt of the earth. And he says, unless if salt is only good, and as long as it's salty, if the salt loses its saltiness, it's no longer good for anything except to be trampled on the ground. Pretty amazing. I need someone, I don't know how to say this. I need someone to remind me about salt and thankfulness together. That's when I said, what do you say? I was so glad you said that so quickly. Pass the salt. Because Thanksgiving time is to be a time of gratefulness. And I think God places reminders, everyday reminders, in our lives without us even realizing what he's done. How do I explain this? I find it very easy during this time of year, actually, I find it really easy almost all the time, to get into an attitude of ungratefulness, of complaining. You know what I mean? It's very easy to get into that heart of complaining and whining. When I was looking at all the different passages, not necessarily doing with salt, but all the different things I was looking at this week, I came across a story had to do with food, Thanksgiving. It's in, let's see if I can find it here real quick. It's in Numbers chapter 11. We were just in Numbers chapter 18, now we're in Numbers chapter 11. And it's a story of God and the Israelites and their trek through the wilderness. And God's providing for them in a pretty amazing way. He's taken them out of Egypt. He's led them through the desert. He's taken them through the Red Sea and the whole nine yards, and he's watching over them. He's provided water for them. He's provided all these things, and he's providing food for them. He's providing manna from heaven. Now, do you guys realize what the manna from heaven is? I mean, it's angels' food. If you look at Psalm, let me look real quick what it says. Psalm, oh, I got it right here. Psalm 78. Look at this real quick. Psalm 78. This is what it says. When he struck the rock, this is verse 20. When he struck the rock, it gushed out streams that flowed abundantly. But he also gave us food. He can supply meat for his people. Verse 21, when the Lord heard them, he was very angry. His fire broke out against Jacob, and his wrath rose against Israel, for they did not believe in God or trust in his deliverance. Yet he gave a command to the skies above. Listen to this. Yet he gave a command to the skies above and opened the doors of heaven, and he rained down manna for the people to eat. He gave them the grain. Listen to this. He gave them the grain of heaven. Men ate the bread of angels. He sent them all the food they could eat. Did you hear that? He opened up the storehouses of heaven, and he sent them the grain of heaven. He was giving them the food of angels with this manna. This is pretty amazing stuff. Go back to Numbers chapter 11. Listen to what it says about this manna stuff. It says, the manna was like coriander seed. It looked like, this is verse 7, the manna was like coriander seed, and it looked like raisin. The people went around gathering it and then ground it into a handmill or crushed it in a mortar. They cooked it in a pot or made it into cakes, and it tasted something like made with olive oil. And when the dew settled on the camp at night, the manna also came down. This is amazing stuff. You could do all kinds of things with it. You could make filet manna. You could make manicotti. You could make manna burgers. You could make banana bread with nuts. You could do all kinds of stuff with this manna. They could crush it. They could bake it. They could boil it. They could do all kinds of things with manna, and it tasted amazing. But here's what happened. Even with the amazing provision of God, they didn't have to work for it. They didn't have to buy it. All they had to do was gather it day by day and fix it and use it. And here's the amazing thing about manna. It was like the perfect food. It was a food from heaven, the perfect food. You didn't need anything else because that's all he provided. It's like the perfect protein bar. That's all you needed. If the world could just produce manna, but we can't. But God was giving it to them every day. Didn't have to work for it. Didn't have to buy it. Didn't even have to ask for it. It was provided without even asking. But here's what happens. Here's what happens. Go back to verse 4 of chapter 11. And it happened so quickly, literally within just a couple words. Listen to what it says. The rabble with them began to crave other food. Did you hear that? The rabble. Now, what does it mean by the rabble? You see, when they left Egypt, there were some people that weren't necessarily Israelites that were just kind of tag-alongs, supposedly. They were just wanting to get out of slavery. They were wanting to get out of whatever trouble they were in. And so they traveled with the Israelites. And some of these people traveled with them a long ways. And some of the people were the people who were always causing trouble. It says the rabble with them began to crave other food. Now, how could you start to crave another food when you're already getting the perfect food? You're not paying for it. It's all right there. They're craving other food. Do you know why they start to rabble and why they start to complain and why they start to do these things? Because they're not grateful. They're not thankful. Pass the salt. They're not thankful. They don't realize that they're giving is a gift from God. They forget their dependence on God. That's what happens. That's what gratefulness is. Gratefulness starts with an understanding that I am dependent on someone or something for all that I have. And when we start thinking that we've got this, that we've earned this, that it's all mine, that I've done this by my own might, my own power, this is all the things that I've created, this is all the things that I've gathered, these are all the things that I've worked for. When we start getting that mindset, we lose the mindset of dependence on God and gratefulness to Him. But look what happened so quickly. It was the rabble that started, but look what it says. And again, all of a sudden, the Israelites started wailing. It went from the rabble to the Israelites. And they said, if only we had meat to eat, we remember the fish we ate in Egypt at no cost and all the cucumbers and melons and leeks and onions and garlic. But now we have lost our appetite. We never see anything but this manna. And they start to whine and complain. And look at how quickly it grows. If you go over to verse 10, it says, all of a sudden Moses heard the people of every... You see this in verse 10? Moses heard the people of every family wailing each at the entrance to his tent. It goes downhill even more. Because with every family wailing at the entrance to Moses' tent, it says, the Lord became exceedingly angry, and Moses was troubled, and he asked the Lord, why have you brought this trouble on your servant? What have I done to displease you that you put the burden of all these people on me? Did I conceive all these people? Did I give them birth? Why do you tell me to carry them in my arms and as a nurse carries an infant to the land you promised on oath to their forefathers? Where can I get meat for all these people? They keep wailing to me. Give us meat to eat. I cannot carry all these people by myself. The burdens is too heavy for me. If this is how you are going to treat me, put me to death right now. If I have found favor in your eyes, do not let me face my own ruin. See how quickly that went? It went from the rabble to the Israelites, to every family, to the leader. You see what a complaining spirit does? How quickly it changes? And you know where the complaining spirit comes from? I already said it. Our complaining spirit comes from the lack of recognition that we are dependent on God. Listen to what he says. Why have you brought this trouble on me? Trouble? Trouble? The manna was intended to be a gift, an incredible gift from God. And so many times, it's so easy to get in this mindset of look at the trouble I've got. Things aren't as good as they should be, when really what God is wanting us to do is really look and see how dependent, how amazingly he is providing for us. We are so blessed in so many ways. And yet so often we get stuck on the negative. I see it so many times in so many different circumstances. It happens in the church. It happens in our family. It happens with our spouses. It happens with our kids. You know what? I am one of the worst about complaining about my kids, and I have wonderful kids. I love them. I have a wonderful spouse. Kathy, I love her so much. And yet it's so easy to fall into the trap of complaining. And pretty soon when we start complaining, it continues to grow in our hearts and we start looking at all the negative rather than the positive things that God is doing in our life. And when we start looking at the negative, it starts coming out in comments and things that we do and the things that we say. We start grumbling. And the grumbling becomes an infectious disease that affects the people around us. Have you noticed that? You know what? I did not create you to be a grumbler. I did not save you and send my son. For you want the things of the world, but to focus on the dependence that you have in him. The way he is providing. The way he is protecting. The way he is showering his love and his mercy and his grace on you every single day. We need to open our eyes. You know, I was incredibly touched this past week. I don't know if anyone else read the post from Caleb's dad this week. Did anyone else read that? There was not a single woe is me in a single sentence of several paragraphs of a dad who the turn of one wheel changed his entire life. It was a letter filled with thankfulness and gratefulness. He was rejoicing in the circumstance that he found himself in. He was rejoicing. His son has gone through a traumatic experience. It's turned his entire family upside down, inside out, and all about, and he is rejoicing in his circumstances because he recognizes his dependence on God, that nothing is going to happen of any good without him continually looking to God for the answers and the strength and the understanding and the power for healing to take place in Caleb's life. He is constantly thanking God for the things that are going on. And I think to myself, you know what? I am one of the most blessed people on the earth. And so are you. There's a passage in Colossians, and then I'm done. Colossians chapter 4. Actually, there's a whole bunch of passages I'd like to look at. We'll look at those in breakouts. How's that? Colossians chapter 4. It says, devote yourselves to prayer. Verse 2. Being watchful. Devote yourselves to prayer. Being watchful and thankful. And pray for us too that God may open a door for our message so that we may proclaim the mysteries of Christ for which I am in chains. Pray that I may proclaim it clearly as I should. Be wise in the way you act towards outsiders. Make the most of every opportunity. Think about this in the holiday season. Make the most of every opportunity. Let your conversation be always full of grace, seasoned, and this is what got me, seasoned with salt, a preservative, a healer, adding flavor, so that you may know how to answer everyone. I'm not sure how to put this. I've been struggling with it all day, all week. But I think there's something God wants us to do. I hope it's not me. I think he wants us to be grateful. Actually, I don't think that. I know that. God wants us to be grateful. He wants us to be thankful. And sometimes we need a reminder to do that. Because if we're not careful, we can get caught up with the crowd like in Judges. We get caught up in the numbers. We get caught up in the crowd and the grumbling and the complaining and the dissatisfaction and all the things. And it's so easily to go there. Does anyone else get there quickly? It's so quick and so easy to get into that state of grumbling and complaining. But we need a reminder, I think, to stay positive, to be grateful, to remain dependent. So I'm going to offer a challenge maybe to you today. This might be a little weird. Stick with me. But I'm not sure exactly, and Nathan warned me against this. I'm not sure exactly what it should be. Maybe you guys can help me. But I think I need a reminder to be grateful, to be thankful, to understand that I am completely and totally dependent on God for everything, okay? Completely. This very breath, he gave it to me. The ability to raise my hands and say, Lord, I lift your name on high from the grave. Everything I have and everything I am is from him. I need a reminder. And so I thought, you know what? Why don't we make a salt covenant? Because I don't know about you, but in the next few days, I'm going to be reaching for the salt a lot. And I could either say pass the salt and put it in someone's mind it's not quite good enough, or I can just wait till the salt gets close enough, or I can eat it the way it is and be grateful for it, or I could season salt. I can do all kinds of things with salt. You know what? I think we need to make a salt covenant. But what is that salt? What should this represent? Because what I'm going to ask you to do today, if you choose to enter into this salt covenant, I'm going to ask you to come up and take a pinch of salt of your own. That's your salt. And I want you to covenant what? What is it that we need to covenant with one another, to remind one another, to encourage one another? To take that pinch of salt, and we're going to put it in this container. This is my salt. And I'm going to covet to what? What? What do you think it should be? You're going to covet to God? We're going to make a covenant with God. That's good. And with each other. Right? To what? Dean, what do you think we need to be doing? Healing. To allow our words to be healing to one another. Yes? What else? What? To be salt and light. What does it mean to be salt and light? Because that's such an amazing thing. But what does it mean to be salt and light? To love? To be united? I'm making a covenant to remind you and to remind myself that the words that I say matter, to allow my words to be seasoned with grace and with salt, with healing, with preservation, with encouragement, to add goodness to someone's life rather than to bring them down. That's what I'm wanting to covenant with you guys. I want a covenant that the words that I say will lift you up, that will encourage you, that will bring flavor to your life and not bring disdain. I want to bring healing to your life with the things that I do and the things that I say, not bring hurt. Some of you might be thinking this morning, man, he's just getting down on us again. No, I'm not trying to get down. I'm trying to get our eyes open to the presence of God in our life, the dependence of God that we need to have in our lives, and recognize that we are here because of him. And he's providing not just manna, but so much more. I want a reminder that my God is here with me all the time. He's providing for me all the time. He's protecting me even in the roughest circumstances all the time. I want a reminder that he will never leave me. He will never forsake me. His love abounds. His grace is ever present. I want a reminder. So we covenant today what? Someone put it into words that we can use. We what? We're coveting to encourage each other. I like that. Yes. Ooh! That is God-inspired right there. Preserve, heal, and make delicious. A PhD with one another. I like that. Did you just make that up? Wow. What? PhD. Wow. That's good. To preserve, heal, make delicious. A PhD covenant. I've got my pinch of salt. And I covenant with you a PhD to help preserve, heal, and make delicious your lives through the words that I say and the things that I do. To build you up and not tear you down. Who will join me? We're going to sing a song right now. And during that song, you have a choice. You can come up, take a pinch of salt, and you can covenant with me to have a PhD to encourage one another. Here's what I hope happens. That you feel the salt, the coarseness in your hands. If you're like me, you're going to get back to your seat and go, that's pretty good. Do that afterwards, not before. I pray that you won't be able to reach for the salt shaker, whether you're cooking or seasoning your food, without remembering that I made a covenant to be encouraging this season, to build one another up, and to be grateful to God for where he's got me and where he's taking me. Even though I might be in the valley, he's still there with me. We're going to sing this song, and I invite everyone here. There's enough salt. There's a big enough container to be a part of this covenant. And here's a question I've got to ask you as we're singing this song. Am I asking you something too hard, too difficult, too impossible? To make a promise, to be encouraging? Build one another up? Or is it something he's already called you to do? It's a reminder. It's time to get your life straight back on the way that he designed us to be. Let's stand and sing.